Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Here it comes. Great blitz pick up by Spears, but that gets knocked away from Levis by Darrell Taylor. Loose ball. And out of the pack, it looked like Edwards recovered it. It is Chicago ball inside the Tennessee 35.
Already worth the trade.
Yeah, 100%.
Already, you won that trade.
Immediately.
Even if he just disappears right now, or Thanos snaps his fingers and he's turns into powder, you won that trade.
What if you get 10 sacks out of him?
Mark Anderson.
Like, you don't feel as bad about the Judon thing, you know, because Ryan Poles was saying how he'd feel sick if Judon had 20 sacks. What if you get out of this, you get...
What if you get 8?
It helped you win a game already.
You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Bernstein and Holmes, 10 to 2, Monday through Friday here on Sports Radio 670. And on our Football Mondays, we talk to Anthony Heron, which is what we are doing right now. What did you think of the recently acquired edge rusher's performance?
So the very first third down of the game, when they had 52 on one edge and 98 on the other edge, and 52 turned the corner and didn't hit Will Levis, but just exploded out of his stance with an energy and a level of juice that's just different from the other edge rushers the Bears deploy. I didn't even know what Darrell Taylor's number was. I had no idea what jersey he was wearing coming into the game, but I just see the dude get out of his stance. I'm like, all right, so I know Austin Booker's number, but I don't know who's going to be the first one to sub in their sub package. So I see a 52 turn in the corner. I'm thinking, all right, so either Austin Booker changed his jersey number, which that didn't move like Austin Booker. That moved like somebody who has rushed the quarterback in an NFL game before. Man, I hope that's Darrell Taylor. So I start thumbing through, and I'm swiping on the website. Like, yes, that is Darrell Taylor. If he can look like that on a consistent basis, the Bears are in business. And they got even more out of him versus the run than I anticipated. I'm thinking this guy's coming in situational third down guy and his very first rush of the game. The way he came out with an explosive first step that covers a lot of ground, and he's got that flat back and works directly into the outside lever of that offensive tackle and then keeps his mechanics going because he's committed to the edge rush. But when the blocker engages him, Darrell Taylor doesn't just kind of settle for that guy leaning on his shoulder. He goes back to chest to back to chest over and over again and keeps his levers moving and violent and can maintain low pad level while doing it. It's really difficult to continue chasing a pass rusher who's able to keep that level of pad level and activity while he's turning the corner, and he showed a lot of that in the very first rush he stepped onto the field. So I'm looking to try to figure out who that is. And when it was Darrell Taylor, I breathed a sigh of relief because that's one of the elements the Bears have been missing. Now, I don't know if the dude's going to a Pro Bowl or not, but that's something that shows up on film. It flashes in that way. So Montez Sweat is still going to get chipped and doubled on a consistent basis after the season he put together last year. But Darrell Taylor can win one-on-one. And if he shows up with that kind of verve and zest every time he steps onto the field,
what about
for the Bears,
vim and vigor?
Oh, man, if he brings the vigor on a weekly basis, then you can take it to the bank, man. A big sack season is on the way because he is going to see a bunch of one-on-one matchups.
That wasn't my favorite thing on the Bears defensive line yesterday.
Big fella.
My favorite thing was Andrew Billings beating the hell out of Peter Skoronski. Snap after snap.
Why do you hate Peter Skoronski?
I don't hate him.
You hate Skoronski.
I was
you
big,
probably hate Studzinski too.
I was a big fan of him in Northwestern, even in the draft conversation, but Andrew Billings beat that man to death. Sweet love was made to Peter Skoronski yesterday by the big fella, and I appreciated it.
And it wasn't only on rundowns. And I know a lot of times, somebody just, sees either big guy, they hear someone as one of the best linemen in football, and they just kind of assume that every aspect of their game is dominant. But Andrew Billings, when he joined up with the Bears going into last season, he wasn't thought of as an exceptional pass rusher. Early in the season, he didn't show a lot of pass rush penetration into the backfield. His game improved in that regard throughout the season last year. And now coming into this season, first game of the year, not only was he impactful against blocks, but in some passing downs, we saw Andrew Billings getting into the backfield, getting to the edge of blockers and being really effective in that manner. Bears defensive front as a whole, I don't view it as all their problems being solved, but the first game out of the books with against an offensive line where that team has spent some draft capital and free agent capital over the last couple of seasons here to put a good, formidable group together. I thought it was a matchup that the Bears' D-line would be challenged and tested by. And schematically, Tennessee did some really effective things running the football early, but I didn't necessarily put a lot of the ill fits in the Bears' run on the D-line early in the game. And then as the game wore on, and especially in the second half, when the game starts to near cold crust depth and you got to be able to lean on some aspect of your team, the Bears' D-line was really impactful throughout. So I thought for the first time out here, for the first game of the season, with a lot of that youth and inexperience that we're still hoping to see growth from, yes, Andrew Billings was exceptional. Javon Dexter had some really nice moments as well. Talked to you guys about his pad level a good bit. There were some really nice looks at Javon Dexter using exceptional pad level for his size, getting into blockers for run fits initially and then converting into a pass rusher, getting rid of those guys. There was some good tape out there being shown by the Bears D-line.
Were my eyes deceiving me, or did I see Andrew Billings at times lined up on the outside shoulder of the guard in what we would call a three technique?
You did. And I'm wondering what the purpose was for, because it happened. It happened pretty frequently in the game with Billings and Dexter in the game together, where at least last season, Billings was your nose. And he was the guy playing, you know, shade on the center on a consistent basis. And then the other guys would kind of, you know, flop to either three technique. This season, at least this first game, that's not what the Bears did. Now, is it? And in my mind, I'm not convinced that Javon Dexter is the style of three technique that Matt Eberflus would maybe value most in this scheme, because he's not a guy with the consistent suddenness, like that burst out of the stance I was just describing from Daryl Taylor that some teams and a number of guys do have on the interior of their D-line. He's not necessarily a really sudden player in that regard, but he can take up space, he can eat up blocks, he can penetrate, and he's showing that he can get into the backfield and make some plays here. So is it, hey, let's give Javon Dexter some looks over the nose as well? We've seen Billings start to develop his ability to penetrate as well. So just make them interchangeable. You don't have to have Dexter as the three technique consistently. You can just have them play left and right. You can have a preferred matchup at times and allow them to decide, or just go into each individual game plan and say that we're good, whoever's the nose, whoever's the three, and you can sort of, you know, have that interspersed throughout the game, just sort of depending on what the situation calls for. So I like that versatility. We know the Bears plan to move Montez Sweat around as more of a movable chess piece and use, or at least I guess sort of force more versatility into his game, so it's more difficult for the pass protection to get a bead on where he'll align and how they try to account for him. And it seems like some of that's playing out on the interior as well. And I think for the most part, they handled it really well yesterday.
I think I've made up my mind after watching one weekend of football. If I'm a head coach, we're not going to mess around with this. Kick the ball out of the back of the end zone. Okay. I'll trust our defense to hold it down from the 30 and have them do their job. I just think that while it was exciting and it was helpful for the Bears yesterday, I think there are so many things that you have to keep in mind with this new kickoff that I'd rather just go, we'll kick it out of bounds and play D.
I think when it comes down to it, there's going to be different coaches who have their own specific philosophy on that. You know, Matt Eberflus, and especially with as much influence as it seems, Richard Hightower, his special teams coordinator, he's a guy who's trusted, a guy who's been in the league for a long time. He seems to have a big voice and a big presence in decisions that get made there, as he should. And between Flus being a defensive guy and the faith he has in Richard Hightower, then, I think the Bears feel pretty good about the idea of being able to pin the opponent down by covering that kick well. So I think that philosophically will be something that's probably going to be inconsistent across the league, depending on the approach of the head coach. If it's a head coach that says, I'm better off just making sure they don't pick up chunk yardage and get easy points because I trust my offense to outscore them anyway, then some teams may have a philosophy on that. But teams who say we're going to benefit, not only will my defense benefit from us pinning that opponent down, but my offense, you know, if we can almost treat it like a punt and pin situation where we get them starting their drive at the 10-yard line or in, and then also now our defense takes the field, we get a three and out, they punt, we get exceptional field position like DeAndre Carter kept giving the Bears offense over and over again.
He's a real returner.
Vomiting away.
That's what a real returner
looks like, right?
Yep.
That's what you're hoping for when someone gets a punt or a kick, you know, kicked to them, punted to them.
Get a first down. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yes, yes, and he did that. And so for the Bears, where they know they got a rookie quarterback, and until the offense proves otherwise, that field position matters for the Bears. So I can understand Eberflus, at least for now, taking that approach to say, let's see if we can take advantage of the opportunity to pin the team down.
While we're talking small victories, the Bears won the toss, and Matt Eberflus deferred. So maybe that was just something he did last year for whatever reason.
You realize it actually worked out well for him last year.
Yeah, but it
did it.
It may have, but it still doesn't. But with a large enough sample, it doesn't. It's just objective. So I would hope that somebody maybe said, all right, whatever that was last year, it's enough. Let's do it the way we're supposed to do it now.
Early in the season last year, he was deferring, and they were losing. And then as the season wore on now, you know, it's very anecdotal.
It's still the right thing to do.
Deferring, and they started winning.
But it's not causal.
In the midst
of all that's like his haircut or growing a beard.
Yes, he has a beard, and now he's 1-0 coaching in the NFL with a beard. So Matt Eberflus is likely to continue coaching with a beard until evidence tells him otherwise. But last season, I think there is some nuance to this, though, because I'm not even completely clear what the numbers actually say about that. Like, Flus addressed that with the media at some point late in the season. He said, I haven't seen any numbers that say if you defer that you win more often than not anyway. But even if I grant that, deferring leads to more wins, last season what I actually liked was that he was doing it the sort of by the book way early, and then he said, let me get my offense on the field at first, get them that opportunity to take the field, get into our scripted plays early. If we have some good vibes, if we actually put some points on the board right off the bat, it seems to have helped the defense. Our quarterback has more confidence early in the game. And that did play out for a little while with the Bears. So he adjusted and stuck with that. Eberflus strikes me as a guy that knows the numbers, likes to ride with the numbers, but still will occasionally just trust the moment within the game, like some of these fourth downs that he does and doesn't go for, or decision like taking the ball or deferring. A lot of those things that he seems to know and respect the numbers and the metrics on, he's still willing to make some gut calls, and I kind of respect that.
What do offenses hope to gain with orbit motion?
When you do motion in general, but especially using orbit motion, you're trying to generate either of a couple of different things. You want to generate leverage on the opposing defense, or you want to generate information. So when you use standard motion, or when you use jet motion where the guy's running, like sprinting directly behind the quarterback, when you use orbit motion allows you a legal opportunity to generate momentum pre-snap. Whereas, you know, jet motion, yeah, you can be running laterally and sideways, but you don't have the possibility of any sort of downhill approach from that player who's going in motion, whereas orbit motion working, and just to be clear, and you described this earlier in the show, orbit motion meaning when the player operates from, you know, essentially when he gets to the hip of the tight end at the edge of the formation or the offensive tackle and begins to work backwards into the backfield behind the quarterback, behind the running back, there's an opportunity now at the snap of the football. He can't be moving forward at the snap, but as he's beginning to work backwards, now there's a threat on that opposing defense. The threat is this going to be a pass receiver that works up the field while he's at a full dead sprint? Or is this someone who's maybe even going to become a ball carrier who can get the ball behind the line of scrimmage in quick fashion and have momentum moving forward? So that individual path of the orbit motion allows a different type of momentum where now, as long as you haven't snapped it when that player is moving forward, you get all kinds of momentum that can be generated from that player who starts off looping back, it like in the arena football.
I was just going to say loop motion that you right. and I had plenty of experience with in the AFL, yeah. where I think that was called very liberally as far as
uh-huh. oh me too.
You're how relative to the actual line of scrimmage that guy was because they wanted it to be completed to him, but
yeah.
a defensive back had no chance against that.
No, it made life really difficult. And yes, you could be moving forward. You just supposedly weren't supposed to be allowed beyond the line of scrimmage at the snap of the football in the Arena Football League.
But sometimes it happens.
By rule, yes, yeah. it definitely happens sometimes. But orbit motion, you'll still see the defense at times. They'll just make a very slight adjustment as the player starts to work from one side of the formation to the other. At times, you'll see this chaotic, you know, sort of movement where the defense will move and trade gap responsibilities at the second level, at the third level. But it's all in not only generating leverage for that football player who's looping behind the backfield, but you're generating information as well. But the information you generate can dictate whether or not you're going to utilize that momentum that the player can develop as he starts to approach the line of scrimmage after you snap it.
Big Ann, as always, we appreciate you. Thanks so much.
All right, fellas, be good.
That's Anthony Heron, who is a staple of our football coverage.